After we had worked through the opening rounds of pomp, the primate stepped up to say a few words. It was possible to hear people sighing and settling in the dark naves behind the screens. I risked looking down at myself and saw dirty bare feet, a rough, dull-colored bolt in the crudest possible wrap, the just-got-up special, scars that were still red, and bruises faded yellow-green. I was the token feral. One of the other embrace groups, the most numerous and dressed up, stepped forward and sang a number. They had enough strong voices to pull off six-part polyphony without showing the strain. What a fine gesture, I thought. Then the group next to them rattled off a monophonic chant, using modes and tonalities I'd never heard before. I saw the next group worrying cheat sheets out of their bolts. Finally then, understanding came over me, and I got the feeling one gets only in an especially sadistic nightmare. I was perfectly trapped. Each group had to sing something. I was a group of one. And it wasn't going to work for me to sheepishly wave my hands and beg off. No one at the Convox would think that was cute. No one would think it was funny. It wouldn't be that bad, I told myself. Expectations would be low. I was a reasonably competent singer. If someone had stuck a piece of music in front of me and said, go, I could have winged it. Sight-read the thing. The hard part was deciding what to sing. Obviously, these other groups had sorted it out weeks ago, chosen pieces that said something about who they were, what they thought about it, their contents, what musical traditions they had developed to glorify the ideas most precious to them. The musical heritage of the consent of St. Edhar could stand in the same ranks as those of much larger consents. I felt no insecurity there. A sizable contingent from Edhar had already arrived, though, and celebrated Inbrace. Arcibald and Tullia had no doubt taken the matter in hand and organized a performance, anchored by Fra Jad's world-shaking drone, that the rest of the Convox was still talking about at their messals. What then was left for me? Harmony and polyphony were out of the question. I wasn't good enough to blow everyone away with sheer skill. Best to be simple, not to overreach, not to make a fool of myself. Very few soloists were good enough that people would actually want to listen to them for more than a minute or two. I just had to do my bit, to show respect for the occasion, then step back and shut up. But I didn't want to just rattle off some random scrap of lesson, which would have been easy and would have sufficed, because, and I well know how insane this is going to sound, I wanted to touch Ayla. Jessery was right about one thing. I was not going to see her until she had made up her mind. But she had to be somewhere in this minster, and she had no choice but to listen to what would come out of my mouth. Singing an old lesson we had learned at Edhar might have evoked nostalgic feelings in our breast, but it would be safe and dull. Jessery had been to space. But I was capable of having adventures of my own, learning new things, taking on qualities that Ayla knew nothing of, yet. Was there a way of expressing that in music? There might be. The Orathenans had used a system of computational chanting that, it was plain to see, was rooted in traditions that their founders had brought over from Edhar. To that point, it was clearly recognizable to any Edharian. It was a way of carrying out computations on patterns of information by permuting a given string of notes into new melodies. The permutation was done on the fly by following certain rules, defined using the formalism of cellular automata. After the second sac reforms, newly computerless avowed had invented this kind of music. In some consents, it had withered away, in others, mutated into something else, but at Edhar, it had always been practiced seriously. We'd all learned it as a sort of children's musical game. But at Orathena, they had been doing new things with it, using it to solve problems, or rather to solve a problem, the nature of which I didn't understand yet. Anyway, it sounded good. The results, for some reason, just tended to be more musical than the Edharian version, which was serviceable for computing things, but, as music, could be hard to take. I'd spent enough time among the Orathenans to hear some of it and to gain some familiarity with the system. I'd had one tune in particular stuck in my head during the flight to Tredegar and my time in quarantine. Maybe if I sang it aloud, it would go away. Once I thought of this, it was the obvious and easy choice. And so when my turn came, I stepped forward and sang that piece. I sang it freely and easily, because I was not troubled by any second thoughts as to whether it was the right thing to do. At least, not until it was too late. Because when I had gotten a few phrases into it, a rumble of astonishment passed like a wave through one wedge of the audience. It wasn't loud, but it was unmistakable. I couldn't help glancing toward it, and then I faltered and almost lost the melody when I saw that it had come from behind the screen of the Thousanders.